The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Because I like the idea of being in community and feeling like we're like a little more connected. You're kind of like far away, some of you, with all the space. So I don't know if you, those on the floor, come closer. You can move your chairs closer as well so that we can kind of... So partly so I feel more connected to you. Connected. I hope it's nice for you to be this way. And also one more. I said, Judy, can I talk to you afterwards? I have something for you to use. One of the important aspects of probably most spirituality, but certainly Buddhist spiritual life, is that of being in community. I don't think I could have practiced as much as I did. I couldn't have matured as much as I have in my practice without a supportive community that supported me, that held me, that inspired me, that challenged me in many ways. Sometimes I think with a meditation tradition, with the emphasis on meditation, it could be easy to overlook the importance of community as part of the practice. And if you're new to this, and welcome if you're new, it's probably just barely enough just to manage to sit here in silence of 45 minutes. And that's enough to deal with, as opposed to all these other people and community. You could take your time. You don't have to. That's one of the great things about this practice here, is that hopefully everyone could find their own way with it and find themselves in it. But still, community traditionally in Buddhism is very important. I know even sitting in silence with others has been very meaningful for me. And sitting alone has been very meaningful for me. One of the interesting transitions for me in my practice was my first, I don't know how many years, 5 years of, at least 5 years, maybe more. It's, it would have been 8 years of practice I did in community. I meditated together with others in the Zen Center. And it was great for me to feel the support of them. I couldn't have practiced as much as I did without other people around me doing it as well. I hear from people who come and talk to me, who live here in this area, who say that in the context of where they work, they're weird. Mostly they say because they've started to meditate and now their values have begun to change. And one of the common values that begins to change that people report to me is they no longer want to gossip. And apparently that's one of the things that goes on around the water cooler or the coffee machine or something. And so it's kind of awkward when that's kind of the currency of the social interactions at work, that they don't want to participate in it. So it makes them odd, right? Take that as just a representative example of some kind of different way of being. So then it's good to kind of be around other people who are odd. So now you're all odd coming here. Or normalize it. Feel like it's, that there are other people doing this as well so that you feel some support. So certainly I felt that in my early years of practice. Just the fact that I was interested in meditation, there were a lot of people in society who were telling me that this was not a good idea. And one of the common voices that I heard, expressions, was that meditating is selfish. And it's always struck me as a very odd critique, because if I told people that I would meditate, when I first started, I'd meditate 80 minutes a day. 80 minutes, right? Two periods of 40 minutes. And I said, I meditate, 80 minutes a day. Boy, it's so selfish, just focusing yourself. I didn't ask people this, but I could have asked them, how much time do you spend watching television? If I had told them I watch television for 2 hours a day, no one would have occurred to anybody that I was being selfish. there's something about meditation, being close your eyes, and you know that it's maybe because it's religious or spiritual or I don't know what. There's something that's kind of threatening or something that kind of indicates, well, if it's religious, it's supposed to be altruistic and connected. And if your religion is not concerned with others, then you're being selfish. So I just happen to watch television all the time, but you're selfish. So that was one of the things I heard, you know, the idea that it was selfish. And being in practicing a community with other people, sitting with people, sitting with sitting groups that I did, it felt, I could really feel the mutual support, and I could feel the goodness coming out of that. That these were people who were either kind of slowly could watch the goodness, the best of people come out, or if it wasn't the best of people coming out, at least you felt it was trying to come out. And that counted for a lot. And then there were times when I was tired, or I was sometimes discouraged or depressed, or had other things I thought were more important, or all kinds of things, television. And so then I would, but you know, my friends and my community was meditating, so I went along and had the support, and I would show up to meditate and had people sitting next to me so that when I had doubts about whether I should sit or not, there were people there. And then also, I was quite capable of having very peculiar ideas, to say it nicely, and about myself, about all, Buddhism, all kinds of things, about life. And by being in a community of people who I shared my practice, my understanding of practice and myself, I got reflected back. I got to hear myself speak. And in that process, that which was hopefully good could grow, and that which was unneeded would fall away, and I'd see it. And my peculiarities would diminish. And one of the things that happened to me in my early years of practice was my whole sense of self-identity started to kind of shift or be challenged or be questioned, maybe question's a better word. How I presented myself to the world, how I wanted people to see me, how I was representing myself to others. The idea of who I thought I was starting to be questioned. And I saw that the people who are my friends who were not practitioners, who weren't meditators, they were kind of, as nice as they were kind of both themselves locked into a certain mode of being around self-identity, identity issues. But they also had locked me in. They had an idea of who I was. And I was supposed to conform to that. But as I felt that I was shifting in my sense of self, my identity, how I wanted to be in the world, how I wanted to represent myself, started to, I didn't need to be a smart person anymore, or, you know, all kinds of things I didn't want to have to be, it was a little bit hard for my old friends because they expected the old guild to be there. And I lost some of my friends in the process, and some of my friends remained because somehow we were able to kind of see through that, or that didn't, wasn't so fixated. But it was very helpful to be around other Buddhist practitioners for whom there seemed to be much more acceptance, and they weren't so stuck or solidified around who I had to be or who they were. And so to be around people who are more fluid or more in a nice way, not caught up in themselves, not so self-conscious, was very meaningful and helpful for me as I was beginning to experiment with putting down my who I thought I had to be, all the shoulds and shouldn'ts and ways in which I stayed hidden, I didn't want people to see me. Ways I did want them to see me, even though it wasn't me, I'd make it up, right, and try to play the game. And so it was very helpful to be around people who were also kind of loosening up that whole thing. And one of the things I did in community was I started experimenting. I didn't know who I was, so it was beginning to shift and change my identity. So I tried on different ones. And I just kind of tried out, what would it be like to do be this way? What would it be like to do this way? Both as a way to kind of break through the kind of more solid idea I had, but also see, was there some other expression, some other way that was more appropriate for who I was? And for me, it felt like a very safe community. The Buddhist community I was in felt like a very safe place to do that experimentation in, because I felt somehow that the Buddhist community was never going to close its door to me. And that's not, it's kind of like not what it does, right? So I was always going to be included. Not that everyone wasn't going to like me, but no one was going to kick me out. And for me, that was a high enough standard to be willing to experiment and play around in different ways. And so in that process, I learned a lot about myself. And in learning a lot about myself, I learned to be freer. And I think that's one of the purposes of Buddhist practice, is to become freer. And one of the great things to become free of is yourself. At least, you know, the conceit or the ways in which we hold on tight to self-ideas. Even protecting yourself is painful to do. And how to go through the world without being so self-protective is a wonderful thing to do. And so I practiced for years in community. And then pretty much all my meditations for many years were always done at the Zen Center, where we sat in groups of people. And then I went to Thailand to be introduced to the practice we do here. And I showed up at a little monastery, and I said, I'm here to do whatever. I didn't know anything about this practice. I just knew I wanted to learn the meditation they did in Thailand. I was basically a meditation tourist. In the sense that I was only in Japan because I was trying to get a new visa to go back and practice Zen in Japan. Only in Thailand to get a new visa to go back to Japan. And so I had to wait for my visa. So what does a Zen priest do when they're in Thailand? Well, you go around to monasteries, right? And so I showed up at a monastery and I said, I'm here, and I'm here to do whatever you tell me to do. I want to learn what you do. And so the abbots gave me a little, what's called a kuti, a little cabin, little hut. It's one room, teeny little shack, basically, on stilts with a little porch. It's probably something like 8 by 12 or something, the size. Just enough for a bed and a little table. And the edge of the monastery over the swamp. And there was this big, big lizard, it was a big thing kind of crawling around there. And there was also a really big pig there in the monastery, grunting around. And so the abbot told me, go there and meditate in this cabin. This is my little shack. And he told me, so I went to the shack to meditate. And pretty quickly I discovered there was no one around to meditate with. I was alone in this little shack. And within a few days I realized this was new for me. And that I had been relying, and then I realized how much I'd relied, without knowing, on the support of the community at the Zen Center. That a lot of momentum in the practice had happened because I was together with a group that was doing it. And I'm very grateful for that time. It provided a very strong foundation for me. And then when I found myself alone in this little shack, then I thought, okay, now is time to learn discipline. Now is the time to learn to have the intention, the motivation, to practice on my own without the support of a group. And so that was a very important part of my time in Thailand, was learning to find that, learning to deal with the issues that came up practicing alone, finding the motivation in myself so that I could keep doing it. And for me, that worked really well, those two phases of my practice, the phase of practicing in community, the phase of practicing alone, and they supported each other and they developed different parts of me. They showed different aspects of freedom. So much so that by the time I went to Burma, to practice, I did a long, more or less, somewhat fairly solitary retreat there. I loved the solitude. It was 8 months, basically. I didn't talk to hardly anyone for 8 months. I talked to a teacher for 6 days a week for 10 minutes. Otherwise, I didn't talk to anyone. And sat in my room by myself, little cave-like room, meditated on my bed for hours and hours on time by myself. And it's usually not the kind of thing that people do. And it's kind of weird, right? Another one of those odd things people do. And it was probably qualifies as among the very happiest times in my life. And I think having learned how to be free, to learn how to be comfortable with solitude, was a part of this process of sitting alone did. And then I came back, and then I sat with people again. Actually, when I came back to sit at what's called the Insight Meditation Society, a 3-month retreat back in Massachusetts. And I wrote to the center before I came and said, could I have a single room? I knew there were single and doubles, because I'm used to meditating alone in my room. And when I got there, I never meditated in my room. I found that it was so meaningful to meditate with group of 80 people who were there, and I sat with them the 3 months. So going back and forth. So sitting in community, practicing in community, practicing alone, both have a place. And here at IMC, I like to think that anybody who comes here is part of the community, or maybe more diplomatically say, anybody who wants to be part of the community is, by virtue of wanting to be part of it. One of the core values of in Buddhist practice that I partly learned from my Zen practice is that we're all in it together. And the more that I practice myself, the more I just feel more and more that we're all in it together. I'm practicing. I guess you're practicing when you come here to meditate. And we're finding our way together. It's not like I'm the expert and I've finished my practice and I can tell you everything. But I find what I find meaningful is we're practicing together and we're finding our way to the truth, finding our way to freedom as a community, as a people together. So here we are. And for today, we're a smaller group, which makes us able to kind of take in a little bit better that we're sitting here with others. And So I was wondering if some of you now would be willing to speak. And I'd like all of you to speak, actually. But I don't know logistically that's going to work with the time we have left. But I wonder if many of you would be willing to take the mic and say something about what you think the value is of a spiritual life, a life of Buddhist practice, a life of looking for the truth, how that can be found in community, the value of community for that purpose. I'd like to hear from you your thoughts on that. Someone break the ice.
I'll break the ice. One of the most valuable things to me about practicing in community is the opportunity to see my own blind spots. I've spent quite a bit of time in solitary retreat, and it can be very easy to feel like you've understood something, mm-hmm. gotten something, uh-huh. or let go of a lot more than perhaps we've really let go of. Mm-hmm. And other people are ingenious at helping us find those spots that are still a little bit sticky. So I really appreciate that.
Great. Thank you. So thank you, Dawn. If maybe you say your name before you speak, that helps our community feel connected.
I'm Kelly, and this is my second time here. The first time was probably about 6 months ago, and it's close by, but sometimes kind of hard to get that initial motivation to. But I just finished a mindfulness-based meditation course at Stanford and really want to keep it going. However, I notice in myself, I can't do it alone. Like, I absolutely have to have the community, so... This is the week after the class ended, and I hope to come back lots. But so I'm very grateful for all of you for helping me to keep this practice going.
Great. Thank you, Kelly.
Hi, my name is Fadi. And I rather meditate with group people than... I do alone as well. So I meditate in the morning by myself. Mm. And but I look forward to coming
here.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Thank you.
Yeah.
Fadi.
Yeah.
My name is Trudy. And when you asked the question how community helped us with our practice, I thought, well, I can't answer that question, really. But I did notice that when we were meditating, in the whole group, I could feel the group. And it's that happens for me. And so it's a really special thing to have that sense of being one with a group of people who are here for the same purpose I am.
It can be very inspiring. And,
yeah.
And some people find that their meditation gets more solid or deeper when they sit in the group. And there's some people who find the opposite. It's still useful.
My name is Andrea. When you're talking about the energy of the group, you could feel the group. That's one of the reasons that I'm drawn to meditate with others, is because of the energy that we share, that we're sharing a space where we can be at peace and connected as one. Recently, I was in Ukiah, and I went to the city of 10,000 Buddhas. I was vacationing there, and we went to their Sunday service. And I've never been there before. I just heard about it from my husband. And the morning service is chanting and meditation, mostly a walking meditation. So I didn't really know what to do, and I was so drawn and connected to the energy of these wonderful nuns and monks who were chanting these glorious chants. I could not contain myself when they did the walking meditation. At first I was shy, I didn't want to get up. And the energy, like you talked about the connection here, was so strong, I just had to get up. And as we're walking, the nuns and the monks are chanting. It was amazing. Mm-hmm. So there's another example of what the energy of perfect strangers and their wonderful chanting can do.
Nice. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Gus, and mine's a much simpler sort of value of the community, which is it's nice to know that there's kind of a home where I can go, a calm home, to be with like-minded people. It's the issue of discipline and knowing that I can go to some place where there's going to be imperfect people like me who are seeking something, and I'm going to be okay there, that it's a calm home.
Great. Thank you, Gus.
Hi, my name is Betsy, and I'm relatively new. I came a few times a long time ago and just moved to Redwood City. So, and I find that meditating with people, it gives me the permission to go deeper, because when I'm on my own and I'm at my house, it's so easy to get distracted. It's so easy to be like, I have to check my iPhone. I've got to, you know, attend to things at the house. But when I come here, I can sit, and there's, you know, I'm not going to get up.
Well, the distractions of the authority of those impulses diminish.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's very important to have that kind of... the values of being in community that perhaps is not so relevant always in this kind of urban sitting group like Monday night, just drop in for meditation, to talk and leave. But it's true for people who get more kind of deeply and kind of involved in any kind of Buddhist Sangha is also the value of overcoming selfishness. And selfishness is a kind of a form of attachment and clinging to self. And so to be able to live in harmony with others and to have one's, be able to question one's own personal desires and to figure out a healthy way to let go of those in favor for what's needed for the group or for others, or to find healthy ways to assert oneself when the group, supporting the group, is not the appropriate thing. And this finding oneself back and forth around the dish, that issue, I think, is very important. Certainly, it's kind of maybe more obvious that when you're in a group, there's also kind of, you kind of a little bit harmonized with a group. But there's also then group pressure. And so part of freedom is also to learn how not to succumb to group pressure in the wrong way. And this is one of the things I had to learn when I was living at the San Francisco Zen Center. Because institutions like that had a tendency to always ask more and more and more. And so they were kind of impersonal. It's impersonal, you know, kind of the institution was asking you, and there was infinite needs. And so I learned that I had to say no. And there was no one teaching me to say no. So, but at some point I had to learn to stay up, and enough is enough. I can't do this. I would work, you know, and I'd work. I worked for the Zen Center five and a half days a week. It was 5.5 days a week I'd work for a Zen Center. And then I had to come back, and I had a house task. I was living there. And so everyone had to, you know, living there had to have a task. So on Sunday, I was supposed to wax the floors. And I used to, you know, be a little bit resentful at waxing those floors. I just worked for them for 5.5 days a week. And then Sunday, my day off, I was supposed to be waxing these big floors, this machine. It was just too much. And I didn't say no to that, but when they kept asking for more. I said, enough, that's enough. So the ability to stand up for oneself and the ability to let go of oneself both as an expression of freedom rather than conceit, rather than holding on to self, knowing how to take care of oneself, is part of the dance or part of the benefit that comes from being in a community that doesn't happen as well when we are living alone or practicing alone. The value of community has a little bit to do with one's background. When I was at the Zen monastery called Tassajara, it was deep in the wilderness, in the mountains east of Big Sur. You have to drive in deep in the wilderness. And there's this monastery in this little valley and end of a dirt road. And I think there were about, when I was there, maybe 45, 50 residents who were living there. And after I'd been living there for a while, at the same time there arrived these two people to be practitioners that lived there for, I don't know, a year or so and practice as in the kind of Zen monastic life. And they came at the same time, but they didn't know each other. So after they were there for a couple of months, I asked each of them separately, how was it to be in the monastery? And the woman said, it's great. I feel like I have time to be alone and have, you know, more solitude and space around me, and it's so great. And then I talked to the guy, and he said, oh, it's terrible. There's always people around me. It feels so claustrophobic. I'm always kind of caught up in, you know, people. There's no space for me. And they were both the same place, right? Exactly the same place. You know, they had different cabins they lived in, but otherwise we shared everything. In Zen monasteries, you do everything together, right? So the same place, two radically different views. So I asked further what was going on for them, and the woman had gotten married when she was in high school, and right away had kids and raised two or three kids or four kids or something, so she'd gone from living at home with growing up to having her own family right away and had raised them, and so finally they had raised and left home, and so for her, who's used to this intense kind of family life all the time, the monastery was really spacious and she felt like so alone. The guy had spent 20 years living alone in a house in Daly City. And so that's what he was used to. And so he, you know, for him, it was like all these people suddenly. He wasn't used to it. So the contrast of what we're used to. And it's not like one is right or one is wrong, but we bring into community our background, our context, our, you know, our culture, our family experiences. We bring everything with us. And it isn't like one culture, one way of being is necessarily right or wrong, but it's really great to be in places where it gets highlighted, stands out, and becomes a mirror for ourselves, and we can find our, find out who, what we're doing, find out how we are, not necessarily so we can change how we are, but so we can change how we get attached. And I think that's the core aspect of this practice, is to learn how not to cling to anything, to hold on tight, grip to things. So don't grip to our sense of self. Don't grip to our desires and our aversions. Don't grip to our fears. Don't grip to a one cultural way over another cultural way, one way, you know. But rather to learn to see it all, to discover our struggles with it, discover how we grip and hold on, how we resist, how we defend, how we hide, in order to find out the way to be free in it. And in, as we become freer, then the hope is that you become more yourself. And this is one of the things that Jack Kornfield has written about, those of you who read his books. He has this idea that the more spiritually mature you become, the more eccentric you become. Maybe I shouldn't say you. Maybe that's a, you know, some of you don't want to be eccentric. Jack notices that those people who become more spiritually mature, that he met, became more eccentric. And I think the explanation for that is that eccentric just means they become more themselves rather than needing to conform to whatever, you know, is expected of them. And that can be in any direction at all. Some people become more eccentric because they become quieter and less extroverted. Some people become more eccentric by no longer being so repressed and held back, and they become more extroverted or more outgoing, depending on what's right for them. There's no way of knowing how you should be, but except by doing it and discovering yourself. But what the practice does is, hopefully, what it does is shows us the places of clinging and false views and ideas that interfere with us, so that with the freedom from these clingings, from attachments, that what we are can flow through more easily. And the profundity of Buddhist practice is that it's not meant to be a self-help. It's not meant to be like you're supposed to now be free to be conceited. it's all about me. But rather, the freer you become, the less attachments, less caught up, the freer you are to become yourself, to be yourself as you are, the less you become the reference point for your experience. The less it is about you, the freer you are to be yourself. I hope that makes some sense. And so the ideas of self, the clinging to self, the needing to prove oneself, to defend oneself, the needing to be someone for someone else, the need to be to make an endless self-improvement project, they all fall away. And in the process of falling away, you get to be yourself more, but it becomes, but you don't care. Isn't that great? Isn't that great? You gotta carry yourself around all the time. So it's nice to kind of carry it around lightly, you know, and not be so care about it so much. Not to think of it as this big thing you gotta, like, you know, engineer and improve and do all the stuff with and make into a better thing. And so it's really great to become more yourself and not care. So any questions? We have 10 minutes left. Any questions about what we've said or anything else? Yes?
My name is Harriet. I'm my second time here, and I'm very grateful to find this location.
If you can wait for the mic, then everyone can hear. Thank you.
Thanks. My name is Harriet.
Is there another mic around?
Thank you, Harriet, for waiting.
Professor, can everyone hear me?
Yeah, yeah.
So my name is Harriet. I'm from New York City. I'm very new to this practice, about 4 months. My husband lives a block away, so I found you guys kind of by chance, I guess due to cookies or something, in my iPhone, and was amazed that it was in walking distance. It's my second time here. Very, really think that it's, in terms of your first question about community and practice, and I really don't know why I do this yet, which is what my question is actually about. But I do feel that there's something very profound about people just sitting down together, and that there's something in the purity of that act that I feel really changes us, but brings us back to who we all are, both as ourselves, but also as a community.
Mm-hmm.
By community, I mean a community not just of humans, but of sentient things, and not just sentient things, but even beyond that. So, and I can't prove that, but I just feel that.
I agree.
That's just to speak to the first point. But my question, which I've probably forgotten now, actually. sorry.
Oh, sorry.
My question has to do, I guess, with the discipline and the commitment. So I'm having a really hard time. Sometimes when I read Buddhist things, which I read a lot of, sometimes it seems very hedonistic. Sometimes it seems masochistic. Sometimes it seems both. But I guess it's hard for me to understand how I can let go of clinging, but at the same time be committed to this practice in a disciplined way. And I guess that's the question.
Oh, so you're concerned that if you're disciplined, then you're clinging.
I wouldn't know if concerned is the right thing, but every time I try to think about it, it feels like a paradox to me.
Okay. So my answer is maybe it's not going to be satisfying, but the answer is just sit anyway. And it'll work itself out.
Thank you.
And I like the first statement you made about, you know, I think it makes me reminds me that important aspects of practicing in community for me is, in fact, that, or when I sit and meditate, there's something about the usual veils or the usual projections or usual ideations around self and other that fall away. And in that falling away, the heart and the mind is more open to connect and feel the connection to others. And whether it's to the people you sit with or the other sentient beings, to have a vehicle for that connection, to feel the depth of that connection that we can feel, has been a very important part of my life. And, you know, it's kind of I organized my life because of that, to be a teacher, for example. And I attribute it a lot to this interface between what happens in meditation and then what happens when I come out of meditation and encounter the world, feel that connection. So any other questions, comments tonight?
Is it on? My name's Carrie. I've been coming here on and off for about a year. Moved down here from Seattle. I just came off retreat this afternoon, and with a very small, intimate community out in the Santa Cruz Mountains.
Oh, with Arena, yeah.
And so what this means to me, this community, is a container to hold my practice in my everyday, daily life. And so I'm real happy to have that.
Great. So you had this experience of retreat, which is important, and this kind of follows up and supports this in daily life. Yeah. And that's nice to hear that.
My name's Chris, and just a comment on why I come here. I just see, everybody sees the world through a different lens, and I just see absolute madness out there. And to me, it's just really helpful to be in with a group that are interested in something, in higher values, and in growing. And so just being in that atmosphere is really good. And this is quite unique because the vast majority of people they could spend their time in the evenings in innumerable ways, watching silly sitcoms, going to a sports bar and screaming at a TV. In hearing other points of view on spiritual growth and so forth, I'm kind of reminded, one of my spiritual teachers once made a comment, kind of a flip comment, but there was a lot of truth in it. He said, if you really want to get anywhere, just do the opposite of what you were conditioned to do when you were growing up. I've done a lot of thinking about that, and I think he was right on in many ways.
There's something to that. So any last words? Anyone? In order to feel complete for the evening? Yes, please. Andrea, right?
Andrea, you were talking about your friend's perception that it was selfish to meditate.
That what?
That it was selfish.
Yes, yes.
To meditate. That really got me when you said that. Because I think getting to know yourself and who you are and befriending yourself and being comfortable with yourself is a gift that meditation and solitude gives you. And in our daily lives, because we have so many roles to play as either teachers or parents or friends, sometimes we forget who we are. So what I got when you were talking is what a gift it is to be with yourself.
Mm.
And
so it's a
know
gift,
yourself.
It's a gift to be with yourself. It's a gift to accept yourself. It's a gift to relax yourself. And as you accept and relax, you'll be less selfish.
Yeah. Thank you.
Gus.
I'm feeling verbose tonight. So it seems like there's also a concept of trust that's developed in community. At least it is for me, in terms of coming here and being with a number of other people and trusting the process and trusting the path, trusting my getting to know myself better. It seems like, I mean, can you talk to that, the element of trust?
Oh, trust is that to trust. To me, I would say that the developing trust was one of the core aspects of my practice as well for years. And I wasn't trusting anything in particular, but maybe it was trusting that it was okay to be relaxed. It was trusting not to hold on to some point of view, hold on to some idea of self. It was trusting just to be alive and be present. And it was a message that I didn't get a lot of places in society, still. Many places you're supposed to be someone, you're supposed to do something, you've got to kind of be active. And my hope is that a Buddhist community like this, especially a meditation one, is a place where people can discover how to trust just being. So I think trust is a great thing to discover.
You just reminded me, I'm not working right now, and I have time for spiritual practice, and I was feeling guilty, and I didn't use the word selfish, but I did some journal writing, so on about page 4 at the bottom, I was thinking, there's so much to do, there's a lot I can be doing. And my sentence at the end was, the most useful thing I can do right now is to watch my mind. And I thought, because then I want to see more clearly and then I'll make better decisions. So then I felt peaceful.
Nice. Very nice. Thank you. Judy. Okay. So thank you for this time to talk about community, sitting and also sharing this way and being together. I hope that it's meaningful for you. When I was coming down here today, one of the feelings in my heart, feelings I wanted to do, was to somehow make you all feel welcomed here. And I kind of didn't know how to do it. I mean, maybe I could have said at the beginning, you're all welcome, welcome. But so this is what we did, but I just wanted to share with you kind of the spirit behind it for me was I wanted to hopefully make this a more welcoming place for all of you. And I hope that, you know, we're a, legally we're a non-profit, which means on one hand, no one owns this place, but it means that it belongs to all of us. So it's not, you know, it doesn't belong to me. I don't feel that way. But it belongs to all of us, those who come here. And so I hope that those of you who come here will feel like it's your place and feel welcome here. And like Gus said, he said it was a home. So please, you know that you're welcomed. Thank you.